Good morning and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. Today is Saturday, April 18th, 2026. I'm Karen Kelly, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds. I'll be starting out with news from the West Valley View, which covers Buckeye, Avondale, Goodyear, and Tolleson. I will then read from the Wickenburg Sun, and at the bottom of the hour, I will be reading news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise. So let's get started with news from westvalleyview.com. Our first article is entitled, Goodyear Hires New City Manager. Article by Jimmy Van Wickler, West Valley View writer. The city of Goodyear will be bringing in Brian Langley as its new city manager. The move was approved at the April 6th meeting, and Langley will be taking the place of now former Goodyear city manager Wynette Reed, following her March retirement. Brian brings extensive experience leading fast-growing communities like Goodyear, Mayor Joe Pozzola said. This is a significant time for our city as one of the fastest-growing in the nation. The council is confident that Brian is the right leader to guide responsible growth, maintain strong financial policies, and ensure the long-term viability of our community. Langley currently serves as city manager of Kyle, Texas, one of the fastest growing cities in the United States, according to Langley. In that role, he oversaw a more than $600 million annual budget and a $1.3 billion capital improvement program. The search for Goodyear city manager was conducted with the assistance of executive recruitment firm WBCP. It began with 205 applicants from across the country, a number significantly higher than average for cities of comparable size. From that pool, the candidates were narrowed to more than 40 individuals considered well-qualified to exceptionally qualified for the position. Following an extensive review process, the Goodyear City Council identified six top candidates, later narrowing the field to three before selecting Langley. I know there were lots of great candidates, but I really feel like I was meant to be here in Goodyear, Langley said. It's very humbling to be selected from so many candidates, but I'm just excited to get to work and get busy on the goals of Goodyear. The recruitment process included community input and participation from a committee of stakeholders, ensuring a thorough process that reflects the priorities of residents and the organization. According to the City of Goodyear, it was a priority to include the voice of the community to gather input on the attributes most important in the next city manager. I think it's great to have that kind of buy-in coming into a new position like this, Langley said. It was great to have all of those people involved so you can have such a well-rounded view of the community coming in, knowing that it's a big decision for them and a big decision for me. One of the city's top priorities is helping guide staff to securing overall financial stability while ensuring positive growth opportunities for the future. Throughout his career, Langley has built a track record of aligning rapid growth with long-term financial stability. I think my experience working with budgets throughout my career has been very beneficial, Langley said. Some people have been in city manager roles and have done really well without that experience, but for me, I've always felt that foundation has benefited me and the organizations I've been part of. Previously, Langley served as city manager in Burleson, Texas, where he improved the city's financial position, reduced the property tax rate over multiple years, and implemented a citywide strategic plan focused on performance and accountability. According to Langley, his nearly 30 years of local government experience has prepared him for the role in Goodyear. My experience of building teams and actually delivering on those capital projects, I thought, was directly tied into the type of things that Goodyear was looking for, Langley said. The same kinds of challenges and opportunities are in Goodyear that I have experienced directly. This will directly benefit Goodyear coming into the organization. He previously served as deputy city manager and chief operating officer in Denton, Texas, helping lead an organization of approximately 1,800 employees and a $1.3 billion budget. Langley holds a bachelor's degree in business administration and a master's degree in business administration from the University of North Texas, as well as a master's degree of science in accounting and information management from the University of Texas at Dallas. According to Langley, he made the move to Goodyear because he felt he could provide some leadership to help the city grow, as well as due to the timing of the opportunity. My wife and I are empty nesters now, so the kids are out of the house, and it was a perfect time for us to be looking at another opportunity, Langley said. We've always looked at Arizona as an area we would like to go to personally, and it's been very attractive to us to try to get there at some point. He said his goals for Goodyear include continued growth, maintaining high-quality services, and supporting and strengthening the workforce. His start date is set for mid-May. And that concludes the article, Goodyear Hires New City Manager. The next article is Buckeye Approves Annexation and Rezoning of Land, written by Jimmy Van Wickler, West Valley View staff writer. The Buckeye City Council unanimously approved two cases involving the annexation of more than 1,900 acres and the rezoning of more than 2,200 acres. Alan Bedoin of Norris Design requested approval of both cases on behalf of property owner Grand View Buckeye LLC for a project known as Grand View Buckeye, according to planning manager Ken Galecka. The first case involved the annexation of 43 parcels totaling more than 1,900 acres, generally bounded by Broadway Road to the north, Jackrabbit Trail to the east, MC 85 to the south, and Dean Road to the west. Annexation allows a city to assume jurisdiction over unincorporated land adjacent to its boundaries and expand its city limits. The purpose of the annexation is really to ensure the development of the site is held to a higher standard than what the county would require, Galecka said. All the requirements were met, and the blank petition was recorded. The annexation allows future development on the property to go through the City of Buckeye's approval process and adhere to city design standards. It also allows the city to collect tax revenue from future development. The second case involved rezoning the annexed land, along with an additional roughly 300 acres, for a total of more than 2,200 acres. The rezoning changes the site from single-family residential, rural residential, and light industrial zoning to a community master plan, CMP, designation. The CMP is intended to facilitate development of a rail-served regional industrial hub with potential for commercial and residential uses. The vision is to see this site develop as a rail-served regional industrial hub with potential complementary commercial as well as residential uses, Galecka said. The CMP includes three land use districts, regional employment, residential village, and commercial. The regional employment district could cover more than 2,230 acres across most of the site, with about 32 acres reserved for potential mega users or large-scale industrial or commercial tenants requiring significant land and infrastructure. Uses in this district include light industrial, limited heavy industrial, and employment-generating uses such as manufacturing, logistics, and data centers. Prohibited uses include marijuana-related businesses and junkyards. Rail access is prioritized, and heavy industrial uses are not allowed along arterial streets at the site's perimeter. making this site attractive for that next big thing from an industrial standpoint is what the focus was and what the focus still is, Galecka said. The residential village district would be located in the northwest, southwest, and southeast portions of the site, near existing or planned neighborhoods, and could range from 0 to 750 acres. The CMP allows adjustments to locations, but does not permit isolated residential areas. Uses in this district include single-family and multifamily housing. Multifamily development is limited to no more than 150 acres, and total residential units are capped at 6,500. According to Galecka, residential development is not required. If the developer wishes to not build the entire site with employment or industrial use, they could look at developing these areas with residential uses, he said. The commercial district would be located at major arterial intersections and range from 32 to 235 acres, with some flexibility in placement. Uses include retail, restaurants, personal services, and office space. There is a minimum that they provide 32 acres, Galecka said, mainly to account for the daily needs of employees who would be working here in the future. Galecka said the CMP is required because it incorporates residential uses within an employment designation to ensure appropriate land use transitions, subject to council approval. A land use transition refers to how different types of development are arranged to reduce conflicts between uses, such as industrial and residential areas. The CMP limits heavier industrial uses on the exterior of the property, Galecka said. There are significant setbacks provided for industrial buildings, as well as additional setbacks for service areas. Design standards emphasize building facades facing streets and residential areas, requiring variation, movement, and high-quality materials. Landscaping will include drought-tolerant plants to enhance streetscapes, provide shade, and help screen industrial uses. If the future State Route 30 alignment runs adjacent to the site, up to 6 billboards could be permitted, subject to city standards. The developer will be responsible for street improvements both internal to this project as well as any half-street improvements on the perimeter of the site, Galecka said. Water and wastewater services will be provided either by the City of Buckeye or through a self-service system. If the city provides service, the developer will construct on-site regional facilities and transfer them to the city. If self-serve, the developer will retain responsibility. For public safety, a temporary fire and police station site has been identified along Jackrabbit Trail with up to 2 years of operations and maintenance provided, unless replaced by a permanent facility. The development agreement between the city and the developer would have a 25-year term. This allows for impact fee credits and/or repayment from properties that benefit from regional or oversized public infrastructure, Galecka said. If this project builds a sewer line that is larger than needed for the site, the portion that exceeds their needs could be reimbursed. And this concludes the article, Buckeye Approves Annexation and Rezoning of Land. Our next article is Avondale Youth Help Plant Trees for Tomorrow, written by Joshua Fenty, West Valley View staff writer. The city of Avondale is on a mission to plant 153 trees as part of its Resilient Roots project, an initiative to achieve 25% urban canopy coverage by the year 2030. Various residents have raised a shovel to support community tree planting days, including many of the city's youth. Our recent tree planting at Mountain View Park was actually mostly kids. We had a couple of families out there, but it was mostly children who were out there volunteering and planting the trees, Avondale Sustainability Officer Kimberly Anderson said. It was really cool to see them get excited about taking part in something like this, especially for a younger generation, to be able to see the growth of those trees and the passing of time and having a tangible connection to the place that they live and the natural environment. It brings me hope for the future. The last Tree Planting Day event took place on March 28th at Mountain View Park. Resident volunteers, many of which were children, helped to plant a total of 13 trees, supporting the goal of bringing more shade to the space and city as a whole. Of the 153 tree goal, 100 are intended to be planted across 6 parks and plazas, including Alamar Park, Mountain View Park, Las Ligas Park, and Dennis DeConcini Park. Many of the identified areas, Anderson explained, are historic areas of the city or locations of newer development where tree coverage is low. The remaining 53 trees are planned for various right-of-ways, along with bushes and other greenery. To date, the Resilient Roots Program has planted 53 of its 100 tree goal in parks along the 40 trees planted in the rights-of-way. According to Anderson, the city's tree planting efforts are a combination of the work of private contractors and community volunteers, funded by the USDA Forest Services Urban and Community Forestry Program, in partnership with the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. As the weather in the state trends hotter sooner each year, the city hopes to use the project to help mitigate heat. Heat resiliency is one of the pathways in our sustainability plan, the sustainability officer said. Trees help improve our air quality and provide shade, which is integral in helping to cool down our cities. If it's cooler and people have a shaded area, they're more likely to get outside. Trees are a powerhouse. According to Anderson, the variety of trees suitable for this project are outlined on the Arizona Department of Water Resources Active Management, Low Water Use, Drought Tolerant Plan list. The species include Chinese elm, mulga, willow, and red push pistache. By the end of the year, the city of Avondale will complete a tree inventory that Anderson said will better illustrate the city's foliage needs on its goal to achieve 25% urban canopy coverage. Upcoming community tree planting days are scheduled for this fall. For Anderson, undertaking efforts to protect the environment is important, as it's our home. We have to take care of our environment. It's all that we have, she said. Regardless of wherever you live, it makes such an impact on your view of life, your place in the world, and your mental health to be able to go outside. We want to be able to provide that to our residents and anyone who comes and visits, but we want it to be welcoming for the natural wildlife as well. Each tree and bush planted provides a home for the animals as well, Anderson added. As Resilient Roots efforts continue and Avondale moves closer to its urban canopy goal, Anderson said that the city is grateful to its residents that have worked hard to contribute. A big thank you for taking the time out of your morning, getting out there, and taking part in shaping Avondale's future, she said. We can go out and plant trees by ourselves, but it's way more impactful to see the community come together, share a laugh together, meet someone new, and get their hands dirty. And this concludes the article, Avondale Youth Help Plant Trees for Tomorrow. And this concludes news from the West Valley View. Now let's move on to news from the Wickenburg Sun. Our first article is Public Safety Members, Residents Honored for Saving 4 People During November 18 Flood. With the help of quick-thinking residents, members of the Wickenburg Police Department were able to pull off a daring water rescue amid intense flooding that swept 2 vehicles off a road last November. Now they, along with members of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, have received high honors. During the April 6 Town Council meeting, Town Manager Troy Smith called up WPD Chief Les Brown to present medals of honor to the public safety members who risked their lives to save others during the flood, which occurred on November 18, 2025. You might remember something called the Miracle on the Hudson River, Smith said. Well, last fall, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office and the Wickenburg Police and Fire Departments engineered a miracle of their own. Brown first acknowledged the dispatchers, fire department, and ambulance services for their role in the rescue. Deputy Ryan Castro, Deputy Richard Dickner, and Pilot Timothy Brennan with MCSO were then awarded the Public Safety Officer Medal of Valor for rescuing three occupants of one of the vehicles swept away in floodwaters. Lieutenant Kenny Lutkiewicz with WPD also received the Medal of Valor for rescuing Barbara Wright, age 84, whose pickup truck was pushed off Vulture Mine Road by a wall of water during the same flood. The Public Safety Officer's Distinguished Service Medal of Honor was awarded to Officer William Zakowski, who also helped, and the WPD Citizens Award was given to Phil and Riley Mahan for their help. Brown, who was at the scene and witnessed both rescues, said first responders were already on the scene, blocking off the road, when a wall of water came rushing down, sweeping the two vehicles away just as officers were telling them to back up. The van was drifting down the wash until it was stopped by a tree. Water filled the vehicle up to the windows, and an MCSO helicopter was called in to allow deputies to rappel down and grab the three occupants. Brown said the officers earned the Medal of Valor because they put their lives on the line, knowing if the van broke loose, they might be taken with it. According to town staff, Dwight Singleton, who was one of the three people rescued from the van, really enjoyed telling the story during the council meeting. At one point, he was talking about the windows being covered with water and debris, but he looked and saw Castro. The most beautiful sight was this guy's ugly mug. Wright's truck, a Ford F-350, was flipped several times by the rushing waters before it landed right side up near the bank of the wash. That's when Lutkiewicz volunteered to wade into the water to save Wright. Riley and Phil then stopped up, grabbing a tow rope from their own vehicle and wrapping Lutkiewicz in it to keep him anchored as he entered the rushing water. Both Wright and her daughter's dog, Daisy, were safely pulled from the truck. Following the presentation of the medals, photos were taken, and Mayor B.J. Bratcher thanked the first responders. How in the world do you put into words thank you for something that is so special and brings tears to my eyes, she said. The flood was the result of an intense storm that swept through the area that closed several roads, resulting in the touchdown of an EF0 tornado just west of Wickenburg and brought 2.83 inches of rainfall over a 7-day period, with most of that hitting the day of the flood. And this concludes the article entitled Public Safety Members, Residents Honored for Saving Four People During November 18 Flood. As a reminder, you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. And let's continue. Next up, obituaries. Michael Eugene Gengler passed away March 31st. Marilyn Town passed away March 25th. Rudy Martin Mouch passed away March 24th. Catherine Helen Wolf passed away March 15th. Next up, around town. Wickenburg community invited to opening of 50-year time capsule. The community is invited to step back in time as a 50-year-old time capsule, buried in 1976 by Garcia School students, is opening this month. The event aims to reconnect Wickenburg High School alumni and local residents with pieces of the town's past, offering a glimpse into life as it was nearly five decades ago. The time capsule opening will take place at 9 a.m. Wednesday, April 22nd at Vulture Peak Middle School. Organizers encourage Wickenburg High School alumni, former Garcia School students, and community members to attend and take part in uncovering the contents of the capsule, which has remained sealed since the nation's bicentennial year. The event is free and open to the public. And also, we have 5th Annual Mesquite Festival scheduled for today, April 18. Celebrate Mesquite, the desert's tree of life, today, April 18th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Haciempa River Preserve. The free event is sponsored by the Wickenburg Conservation Foundation, Friends of the Haciempa, and the Cave Creek Desert Awareness Committee. Festival highlights include uses of mesquite by Native Americans, how to harvest, mill, and use it to make delicious drinks and foods for sampling, medicinal uses, and how it can enhance desert landscapes. Hourly workshops starting at 9:30 a.m. will be led by experts who will share the healing properties of desert plants, practical uses for mesquite, palo verde, and ironwood beans, and a hands-on experience making flavorful mesquite treats. For more information, visit wickenburgtrails.org. And that concludes Around Town. Next up, this week in Wickenburg history. 50 years ago, April 22, 1976, VNB celebrates 30th anniversary. 30 years ago, on April 29, 1946, nearly 5,000 people gathered at 108 North Frontier Street for the opening of Valley National Bank's Wickenburg office, the city's first bank. The Wickenburg office was the 22nd in Valley Bank's statewide system, which has grown to more than 160 offices today. To meet the needs of increased business, a second Valley Bank office was opened at 800 Whipple Street in 1970. Valley Bank now has 18 employees in its two Wickenburg offices. 30 years ago, April 17, 1996, baseball field dedicated to 30-year coach. "It's been a great carpet ride," said Wickenburg High School counselor and coach Joe Kenrick. But like all good things, the ride must end. At the end of this school year, Kenrick will retire from the local school district after 34 years of service, leaving behind a vast reservoir of respect and affection from those faculty and staff members who have worked with him and those hundreds of players he coached. This coming Saturday afternoon, April 20th, a special dedication ceremony at the Wickenburg High School baseball diamond is planned. The field will be renamed Kenrick Field. It honors a man who coached the Wickenburg High School varsity team for 30 years. And that concludes this week in Wickenburg history. And we'll conclude with the Wickenburg Pet of the Week, which comes to us from the Humane Society of Wickenburg, located at 4000 Industrial Road. This week's Pet of the Week is Hope. She is a Australian Red Heeler cattle dog mix, weighing just under 38 pounds. She's 9 months old, has an intake date of November 17th, and an adoption fee of $300. Her bio says, "Hope, the sunshine spirit." Say hello to Hope, a joyful cattle mix sweetheart whose name fits her perfectly. She's full of sparkle, wiggles, and that unmistakable puppy innocence. Hope loves making new friends, running around with her sister, and soaking up every bit of affection she can get. She's eager to learn, eager to love, and eager to become someone's loyal companion. Hope will thrive with a family ready to give her structure, guidance, and all the cuddles she deserves. And that concludes news from the Wickenburg Sun. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. I'm Karen Kelly, and you're listening to the West Valley News Digest on Sun Sounds of Arizona. For the remaining time, I will be reading news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise, from yourvalley.net, as well as the online editions of the Glendale, Peoria, Surprise, Independence, and the Peoria Times. So let's continue. Our first article is entitled Arizona Financial Turns 90 by Upgrading Glendale WYCA, and this comes from the Glendale Independent. Arizona Financial Credit Union kicked off its 90th anniversary year in April with a valley-wide day of service, as more than 100 employees, family members, and community partners to support two local nonprofit organizations through hands-on volunteer projects. In partnership with Hands-On Greater Phoenix and Arizona Financial Foundation, credit union volunteers dedicated the morning to beautification and improvement efforts at the WYCA in Glendale and another facility in Apache Junction. At Arizona Financial, our 90-year legacy is rooted in people helping people. Amy Heisel, president and CEO of Arizona Financial Credit Union, stated in a press release, "We have been deeply connected to our community since day one. This day of service is a reflection of who we are, not just a financial institution, but a community partner committed to making a meaningful, lasting impact." At the WYCA in Glendale, volunteers built and planted garden beds to support the organization's Meals on Wheels program, created an outdoor cafe space with seating and barbecue amenities, painted an outdoor mural, and refreshed the dining room with new furniture, shelving, and organization systems. WYCA is building a world where every woman has what she needs to live a life of health, fulfillment, and freedom, no matter her identity, income, or story, stated Sharifa Rowe, Interim Executive Director with WYCA. We are so appreciative that Arizona Financial volunteers are keeping this dream alive by investing in our campus to create a beautiful and safe environment that will help women flourish. And that concludes the article, Arizona Financial Turns 90 by Upgrading Glendale WYCA. Our next article comes to us from the Peoria Independent and is entitled Peoria Council Chamber Reopens Next Week. The Peoria City Council returns to their newly renovated chambers 6 p.m. April 21st. This marks the first council meeting in the updated space designed to better serve residents and enhance the meeting experience. Since last August, meetings were being held in the Peoria Public Safety Administration Building in the Peoria Room on the second floor, 8351 West Cinnabar Avenue. City staff says they appreciate the community's patience and understanding during construction and look forward to welcoming the public back to the updated space. The next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting is 6 p.m. Thursday, May 7th. All City Council and Planning and Zoning meetings are broadcast live on Cox Channel 11, as well as the city's Facebook and YouTube channels. All meeting agendas and information are available at least 24 hours prior to the meeting at www.peoriaaz.gov/council. And that concludes the article entitled Peoria Council Chamber Reopens Next Week. Our next article comes to us from the Surprise Independent, as entitled, Surprise Art House Says It Will Be Closing Its Doors. Independent News Media. After 7 years of creativity, community, and countless unforgettable moments, Ground Floor Artists wrote on social media that it will be closing its doors at the end of May. The art studio at 13343 West Foxfire Drive will continue to run its programs through then. This was not an easy decision, and our hearts are full as we reflect on everything we have built together. The art, the friendships, the growth, and the magic that happens when a community truly shows up for one another, the studio posted on Facebook. Yesterday, on Friday, April 17th, Ground Floor had a reception for its final gallery exhibition entitled Ordinary Objects. There will also still be Friday night Art Madness classes on April 24th and May 29th, as well as Saturday in the studio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on April 18th and May 16th. And this concludes the article. Surprise Art House says it will be closing its doors. Let's continue. Our next article is also from the Surprise Independent and is entitled, Surprise Celebrates Itself Despite Outside Protests, written by Jason Stone. The elephant in the room, or in this case a stadium, was the protest that was taking place right outside it. With a little over 100 protesters of the ICE Detention Center picketing in the parking lot beyond the outfield, Surprise leadership held court on the concourse behind home plate on April 14. With no hint of the protest outside and using the theme Teaming Up for Progress, the city celebrated the partnerships with other agencies as well as its own people. If you think about it, it's a lot like a sports team, Mayor Kevin Sartor told a couple hundred people who sat in seats above the first base dugout. You need a strong roster, a clear game plan, and most importantly, new teammates that you can count on. The city moved the annual April showcase outdoors this year, which seemed like a risky move when it was announced in 100-degree weather a month ago. But the weather held up and made for a comfortable evening for those who attended the baseball-themed event. While not mentioning the ICE controversy that is gripping the city, Sartor declared the state of Surprise strong. When we work together and keep our eyes on the goal, there's no limit for what we can and we will accomplish, Sartor said after those in attendance viewed the latest city video that details the accomplishments of the last year. The video detailed the city's transportation plans, business developments recently added, upcoming shows the city is producing at the Vista Center for the Arts, and the city's water portfolio, among other items. City council members wore black and purple Surprise-themed baseball jerseys with their names and district numbers on the back. They were introduced on the public address system like baseball players at the beginning of the event. When Vice Mayor Earl Greenberg was introduced, the PA announcer made a poke at his push to have the signs reminding motorists to yield for flashing left arrows. District 4 Councilmember Johnny D. Melton was introduced as the original Johnny on the Block. This guy needs three initials to hold a name tag this big, the PA voice said, drawing big laughs from the crowd as he waved. To view this year's surprise video, log on to surprise.gov/SOTC. And this concludes the article entitled, Surprise Celebrates Itself Despite Outside Protests. Our next article is Peoria Unified Cuts Grant-Funded Social Workers, written by Samantha Rhea, Peoria Times staff writer. The Peoria Unified School District will eliminate 9 grant-funded social worker and mental health positions, citing the expiration of state grant funding and uncertainty around future awards. The decision, approved last week by the district's governing board in a narrow 3-2 vote, will result in a reduction in force effective at the end of the current school year, effectively removing all social worker positions from the district. The positions are funded through the Arizona Department of Education's School Safety Program Grant, a competitive state-funded grant that runs in 3-year cycles. The grant funds positions including juvenile probation officers, social safety officers, school counselors, school social workers, and school resource officers, SROs, on public and charter school campuses. The district currently has 9 employees in social worker or school counselor mental health positions supported by the grant. As of the 2025-26 school year, the program funds more than 1,000 public and charter schools across Arizona, including 369 school counselors, 143 social workers, and 247 school resource officers, according to ADE. I do want to stress that this is based solely on the expiration of grant funding and program considerations, truly not a reflection of the performance or value of the individuals in these roles. District Superintendent Kenneth Christopher Casey Summers said at the April 9 board meeting. Summers said Peoria Unified has applied for a new round of funding, but there is no guarantee the grant will be awarded. And even if it is, it would not necessarily fund the same positions or schools. Board member Melissa Ewing asked why the district would not wait for the grant results before moving forward with the reduction. Summers said doing so could create false expectations for employees, noting there is no guarantee of funding and that each grant cycle is evaluated independently. There's no guarantee of those grant funds being awarded, so I think you would be doing a disservice to the individuals in those roles to presume that it will. And you've got to think of the new grant cycle as its own grant cycle. It's not a continuation of where it is right now, Summers said. So those two factors alone are such that this is the position that we're in at this time. We just cannot guarantee those individuals that there will be eligibility for funding, or that the position that they may be in will be maintained at a present school. Those are unknown aspects of this whole thing. Board members acknowledged the difficulty of the decision, as well as the limitations of relying on temporary funding sources. "We can't sustain a program on a grant," board member Janelle Bowles said, noting that demand for the school safety program funding has increased significantly across the state. To be transparent and real, they're going to give SROs in that grant before they're going to give social worker. And we just have to prepare for that. And if they don't, great. We can't sustain a program on grants. The vote followed public comment from community members who urged the board to delay the decision and highlighted the role social workers play in supporting students. One parent, sharing her experience as a foster parent, described the impact of school-based mental health support, saying social workers help students navigate trauma and work with families to address students' needs. Another speaker, Vanessa Goolsby, asked the board to postpone the decision until the district received results from its grant application, warning that cutting the positions could have an immediate impact on students. These counselors and social workers are often the adults that really just, they notice things first, Goolsby said. That's what they're trained to do, before that struggle turns into a real crisis, and they support their mental health, their social growth, development, and safety. It is critical that those children that need the support, that they are remaining safe to themselves. For many students, they are the difference between feeling overwhelmed and feeling supported enough to keep going. Summers noted that while the reduction in force affects the current employees in those roles, the positions themselves could return if future funding is secured. Still, without a dedicated funding source, district officials said there are no plans to absorb the costs into the general budget. The decision reflects a broader challenge facing school districts across Arizona, as many student support roles have been funded through temporary grants rather than ongoing funding streams. And that concludes the article entitled, Peoria Unified Cuts Grant-Funded Social Workers. Our next article is entitled, Under New Coach Mike LaFleur, Cardinals Try to Reset Roster Starting with Number 3 Pick in NFL Draft. This is written by David Brandt and comes to us from the Glendale Independent. The Arizona Cardinals have a new coach in Mike LaFleur and a holdover GM in Monty Ossenfort. The franchise's hope is their different perspectives can combine for one successful philosophy as they evaluate players heading into the NFL draft, which begins on April 23rd when the Cardinals have the number 3 overall pick. We have structures, processes in place that you get used to with one group, Ossenfort said. Now there's a bunch of new coaches. It goes both ways. There's ways that I like to do things, and there's perspectives that LaFleur brings that I haven't seen. That's exciting. It brings something fresh to our process. The Cardinals are in reset mode after finishing with a 4-13 record, firing coach Jonathan Gannon, and releasing franchise quarterback Kyler Murray. Making the playoffs next season might appear to be a tough task, considering last season's lack of success. But for Ossenfort, who is now in his fourth season, significant improvement might be needed in 2026. Ossenfort said his job status wouldn't affect his mindset heading into the draft. We're always looking to be the most competitive we can be this year, Ossenfort said. And there's always a long-term aspect to roster building as well. We have a challenging division. We have the Super Bowl champs, the team that was playing to go to the Super Bowl, and a team in the final eight. It's a meat grinder of a division, but we wouldn't want it any other way. Quarterback options. The Cardinals have two solid veteran quarterbacks in Jacoby Brissett and the recently signed Gardner Minshew. Both have starting experience in the NFL, but both are widely seen across the league as stopgap solutions who are better suited as quality backups. In many drafts, the number 3 pick would represent an opportunity to add a franchise quarterback. That's not necessarily the case. The Raiders are expected to take Fernando Mendoza with the number 1 selection, and after he's gone, there's no consensus that a true first-round prospect at QB exists. Alabama's Ty Simpson could be the next best option. If the Cardinals want to target him, they could trade down from the number 3 pick, add another pick, and possibly still select Simpson. Need. Paris Johnson Jr. has been a quality left tackle since the Cardinals selected him with the number 6 overall pick in 2023. Now they need someone to complement him at right tackle, which has been a revolving door over the past few years. The defense could also use another elite pass rush threat to pair with Josh Sweat, who had a career-high 12 sacks after signing a $76.4 million four-year deal last offseason. Don't need. The Cardinals have a franchise tight end in Trey McBride and good backups with Tip Ryman and Elijah Higgins. They're also fairly deep at running backs after signing Tyler Allgeier to join James Conner and Trey Benson. And this concludes the article, Under New Coach Mike LaFleur, Cardinals Try to Reset Roster, Starting with Number 3 Pick in the NFL Draft. Our next article is entitled, Glendale Approves Giving 95th Avenue Right-of-Way to VAI Resort. This comes to us from the Glendale Independent and is written by Richard Smith. The Glendale City Council unanimously approved an ordinance Tuesday night authorizing abandoning 3 rights-of-way in the city. Most notably, Glendale surrendered part of the 95th Avenue right-of-way and associated public utility easement adjacent to the VAI Resort Office Complex, 9481 West Montebello Avenue. It is currently being used for storm water retention. This area will be incorporated into the VAI development while maintaining the required drainage capacity, and the city will retain the public utilities for potential future infrastructure needs and improvements, Glendale Engineering Services Director Georgi Pavluk said April 14th during the meeting. Glendale also gave up lower profile rights of way at Harbor Park, 107-7550 North Glen Harbor Boulevard, and Take 5 Oil Change, 9142 West Camelback Road. Pavlovic said both developments removed existing infrastructure and no public facilities will remain in the abandoned easement. As for VAI, if the resort maintains its late 2025 stance, it will not open to the public in 2026. We anticipate making a specific date announcement approximately 9 to 12 months in advance of opening, with adventure park tickets, concert tickets, and/or hotel rooms on sale a few months prior to opening, Rian Kirkman, VAI's SVP of Marketing, stated in a December 2025 email. And this concludes the article. Glendale approves giving 95th Avenue right-of-way to VAI Resort. And our last article is entitled Artemis II Ignites New Space Race, written by Judy Bloom, West Valley View columnist. Artemis II, more than a mission to the moon and back, a symbol of hope and inspiration. Once again, space travel has captivated the public with not only astounding technical milestones, but personal stories of preparation, trust, and teamwork. An engineering triumph. And behind the scenes, overcoming decades of political, financial, and scientific challenges. It was 57 years ago that Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon. Traveling in the Orion spacecraft, four astronauts went deeper into space than any other human has gone. Could this achievement be the start of humanity's next chapter? The Artemis II mission is NASA's deliberate step toward a sustained human presence on the moon. Think about a lunar gateway station, a human-inhabited outpost that will serve as a launch pad for crewed missions to go further into space. Exploration, discovery, trailblazing. The south pole of the moon is beckoning. It is the major focus for global space exploration. Many nations, such as India, China, and Russia, have plans to go there. The future Artemis III mission aims to land humans there by 2028. What's so special about the lunar South Pole? Water. Ice found in permanently shadowed regions of the South Pole offers resources for drinking water, oxygen, and fuel. There are also peaks of eternal light that can offer solar power for the outposts. What do you take into space? How about a plush toy designed by a California second grader named Lucas? The 8-year-old's official moon mascot was chosen out of 2,600 entries from over 50 countries. The white moon plush is called Rise and wears an earth cap with a brim that highlights the galaxy and rockets. The design was inspired by the famous Earth Rise photo taken during the Apollo 8 mission in 1968. Artemis II is an ambitious endeavor, from the space launch system to the Orion spacecraft, robotic landers, and next-generation spacesuits for launch, entry, and surface exploration. This all takes scientific and engineering discoveries, as NASA considered every possible safety consequence for the astronauts and the broader environment. There were space capsule issues to solve, like extremely high temperatures and intense acceleration forces. Houston, we have a problem. Some folks made fun of a $90 billion space program that ends up with a broken toilet on board the Orion within 2 hours of launching. Hey, things happen. At least it was fixed. It might not have been the crew's number one concern, but it was a concern for going number one. The situation was handled perfectly when ground control gave explicit instructions to the crew to correct the potty problem. With future plans for space travel come missions that seem impossible. Dream big, then launch. Go where no one else has gone before. A teenage boy watching the Orion launch live in Florida was asked by a reporter why he was there. His answer? Because this is a big freaking deal. And now all the math and physics that I have been learning seems to make sense. Once again, the song Fly Me to the Moon has become a hit. And that concludes the article, Artemis II Ignites New Space Race. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining me for the West Valley News Digest. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. I'm Karen Kelly, your Sun Sounds broadcaster. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.